noon. Temple hosts Maryland also at noon. And Villanova meets Fordham at 6. You're listening to WHYY.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. If you have a cool season lawn, that's most of the lawns in the north and all of the bluegrass, the fescues, and the ryes, this is the perfect time of year to do any little repairs you need in bare spots or ratty areas or little areas that suffered in the summer heat. So the question of the week is about overseeding bare spots in your lawn. Otherwise, it's a phone call show, cats and kittens. We're taking that heaping helping at 1-888-346-9499. Becky, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am doing excellent today, Becky. How are you?
I am doing fabulous.
And where is Becky fabulous?
In Clarksville, Tennessee.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Becky in Tennessee?
I have planted a ginger root that had gotten all wrinkly on my counter, and I decided to throw it in the dirt just to see what would happen. And now it has sprouted, and I have one sprout that's about 4 or 5 inches tall, and I'm getting 3 or 4 more little ones that are popping up now. And I want to try to keep that ginger alive.
Well, it's interesting. That's how you plant ginger. Is you can take, typically you don't wait until the roots start shriveling up. A lot of times when I wanted to grow some ginger, I would just go to Chinatown here in Philadelphia, buy a ginger root, cut it into pieces, put them all in pots, and I would grow the ginger over the winter. And isn't it surprising, the shoot that came up? You certainly didn't expect it to look like that, did you?
I did not. I was just like, huh, it worked.
And it's kind of like a giant blade of grass or a miniature bamboo leaf. It's a very unusual green growth of the plant. But obviously, we grow it for the root underground. But one thing I've learned when I harvest my ginger is the greenery above ground tastes like ginger, too. So you can chop it up. And what I do with the top growth is I'll chop it up and I'll mix it into a marinade, where I'm not going to actually eat the green part of the plant. And it imparts a wonderful ginger flavor. Now, have you planted it outdoors?
It's in a pot on my back deck.
Perfect. And what's the sunniest spot in your inside your house?
Most likely the kitchen.
Okay. And does it get good sun for how many hours a day?
I'd say probably 6 to 8.
Oh, okay. Good, good. Now, you won't get that much over the deep part of the winter, of course. But that sounds good. Ginger grows itself. There's really not a lot for you to screw up here. Did you even use potting soil, or did you just fill it with garden dirt?
I had a mystery bag of dirt on my porch that was there from a couple years ago when I was trying to grow plants.
Right.
I think it was some form of topsoil possible.
Okay.
And so I just poured that in the bucket and put the root in it, and here we are.
If you want to continue doing this, and you can grow as much ginger as you want, especially if you like to use ginger, if you grate ginger into a lot of dishes, you can have like 6 pots of this stuff growing. You need a root piece that's about as big as your thumb. The part of your thumb that comes off your hand, a root piece that big is enough to get a plant started most of the time. So, for instance, if you go to the grocery store, go to a Chinatown store, and you buy a big ginger root, you can snap it in half, use half for cooking, and then you can probably make 3 or 4 plants out of the other half. Ginger loves to grow. It's not fussy about soil. It's really not fussy about watering. Although I will warn you, over the winter, be careful not to overwater indoor plants. In the winter, even if they're still growing, even if they still seem happy, plants use a lot less water. So, you know, when you put the pot into the area where it's going to get the sun, make sure you get a good feel for what the pot feels like when it's soaked with water and when it's dry. And if the pot still feels heavy, even if it's been a while, don't water it. Wait until the pot feels light. And that way you won't get the soil all loggy, because overwatering could kill the ginger. Other than that, the only thing you have to remember is ginger is a very tropical plant. It can't take any kind of a chill. So you are welcome to leave it outside. My ginger is outside right now. in various pots, and it'll probably be outside for another solid month. But when the nights start to dip into the 40s, and especially the first night that dips into any kind of 30s, they come inside. The more light you give it, the more green growth you'll get on top. The more green growth you get on top, the bigger the root in the soil will become. So it's fun to grow ginger, but the longer you let it grow, the bigger the root you're going to get. It's not like potatoes that get done eventually, or garlic or onions. That root will just grow exponentially. So, for instance, if you wait a year to harvest, you'll get a really big root. But if you only wait a couple of months, then you'll have turned a withered root into a fresh, plump, juicy root. So it's a lot of fun. It's something you can't go wrong with. I had a friend who used to do this, and he let one piece of ginger go for so long, it actually split the pot wide open and harvested itself. The pot sides just fell apart, and there was this giant root inside. It was like 3 years old. And a little bit of it had gotten woody from being in there so long. But I would say, just off the top of my head, a year is perfect to get like a big root in there. 6 months, go ahead, because you can always just use some and replant the rest. Ginger wants to grow. All right, Beck?
I'm good.
Oh, yeah,
yes,
you're going to have fun. This is a great fun thing to do. This is a great thing to do with kids, is take a ginger root and sprout it. This is something, if there's any teachers listening, they could do this in their schoolroom over the winter. It's tons of fun.
Well, I will definitely keep growing ginger.
Once you've done this once, you never stop because it's so easy. All right, Beck, you take care and you have fun growing your ginger this winter.
Thank you, and I really, really love your show.
Thank you so much. You take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Alan, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Alan. How are you?
I'm fine.
And where is Alan Fine?
In Hunterdon County, New Jersey, near Frenchtown.
Very good, sir. What can we do you for?
Well, I've got a pot of cherry tomatoes, which I really enjoy eating when I'm working outside. I'm kind of a casual gardener. I'm kind of lazy, I guess you might say, because last year this pot grew a big bush of cherry tomatoes, and
right,
it was very prolific. Well, this year I kind of just stuck a starter plant in there and didn't change the soil.
Right.
And what I got this year is a tall spindly plant that's not putting out that many tomatoes. Is there anything I can do to feed this?
How big is the container?
It's about 14 inches across, about 14 inches high.
That's perfectly the good size for a single cherry tomato plant, which typically grow like weeds, Alan. You're a miserable failure here.
I know. Last year it did grow like a weed, and I would just, every time I drive by in the tractor cutting the grass, I'd reach out and grab a couple of tomatoes, and this year I'm rationed to one or two a day.
That's the way to do it. So what did you fill the container with originally?
Oh, I don't know. It was some kind of soil, potting soil, I suppose, last year.
And did you feed it at all this year?
This year I did. Because it wasn't coming up too long, I stuck a couple of Miracle-Gro spikes in.
You did it.
I even called Miracle-Gro before I did this to make sure it'd be okay.
Well, of course they said it was okay. They want you to buy their spikes.
Right. I'd rather do something better. What's better than that?
Compost. Or at this point, what you need to do, is there a saucer underneath this thing?
No.
So it just drains freely?
Yeah.
And this summer, you've had to keep it really well watered.
At night. I water at night.
No, you're supposed to water in the morning. Not in the evening. And when did these spikes of death go in?
About a month ago.
Okay, so they're all dissolved now. You can't pull them out of there.
Right.
If you remember where you put them in, it might be good to get some of that soil out of there. But what I want you to do is I want you to really flush this plant. See, what these chemical fertilizers are is highly concentrated chemical salts. And they can be death on a stick to plants out in the garden. But when you've got a plant stuck in a container, the salts tend to build up, the salts tend to overwhelm the plant. And in this case, what's happened is your plant has probably gotten too much nitrogen and not enough phosphorus and potassium. These chemical fertilizers tend to be unbalanced. But there's still time to salvage the season. What I want you to do is, with a hose, in the morning, I want you to go out and I want you to lightly water this thing until the water comes out the bottom, and then keep watering for another 5 minutes. And I want you to do that for like 5 days in a row. And then, because we are kind of late in the season, I want you to buy a nice liquid fertilizer. Most larger garden centers have fish and seaweed mixes that are liquid. And, you know, it'll come in a bottle, and it'll tell you to mix up a certain amount in a watering can with a certain amount of water. And so don't, you know, buy whatever makes the most economic sense for you. This stuff keeps over the winter. Just keep it in a cool, dry place. And you can use it to feed any outdoor plant. You don't want to use it inside on house plants because the fish part can be a little stinky.
Okay.
So after we've spent like 5 days flushing the salts out, then
right.
let the plant sit for a day, then water it with the fish and seaweed mix.
I'll do that.
All right, man. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll appear at the Silverside Church Green Fair in Wilmington, Delaware, next Saturday, September 15th at 10:30 and 12:30, at a very special WHYY member event at Springdale Farms in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, on Thursday evening, September 27th, and at the Mount Laurel, New Jersey Library on Sunday afternoon, October 7th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events and appearances section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with everything you need to overseed your poor heat-stressed lawn and lots more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee, a national supplier of seeds, plants, and bulbs, supports You Bet Your Garden and reminds growers that now is the time to start fall crops like broccoli, cabbage, and cauliflower, and to get ready for garlic planting. More information at burpee.com.
You're listening to You Bet Your Garden on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Greener Partners announcing their annual Square Dance and Pig Roast Friday, September 28th. And they're celebrating the Harvest Festival Saturday, September 29th. The festival features family activities such as local food vendors, heritage breed animals, hay rides, an heirloom tomato contest, and more. Both events will be held at Hillside Farms in Media, PA. For tickets to the Square Dance and Pig Roast on Friday evening, and for more information about the festival on Saturday, greenerpartners.org/heirloom.
With Labor Day behind us, it's back to work we go, but don't cry about it. Or maybe do.
41% of women reported that they had cried during the last year in the workplace, and 9% of men. And crying made no difference whatsoever in terms of a person's success.
I'm Tess Vigeland. Unhappy at work? Let it out. Or don't. That's next time on Marketplace Money from APM. This afternoon at 3 on WHYY.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later, this is the perfect time of year to do spot repairs, fill in bare spots, get rid of ratty areas in lawns that are composed of bluegrass, fescue, and or rye. We'll tell you exactly how to do it correctly when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, lots more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Monica, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for taking my call from Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, well, thank you for making your call from Chicago, Illinois. What can we do for Monica in the Windy City?
Well, my question is about growing plants in straw bales. I buy straw bales and my pumpkins from this woman comes down from Michigan every year and sells her stuff around autumn. And I use the straw bales just as decoration in front of the house.
Right.
And then, actually, last year I kept them over the winter, just left them outside by accident, just through neglect, and I found out that in the spring I could actually use them as planters. So I tried that. I planted potatoes in one of them, and zucchini, no.
No. No, see, this is one of the gimmicks that's going around right now. There's endless gimmicks with gardening, and I think garden writers perpetuate it because they think they always need something new to write about, or they go find some old technique. And one of the problems with, quote, straw bale gardening is that it's like the worst container because it's always wicking moisture into the air. You're no Oklahoma City, but you have a constant wind there. So if you're going to grow in containers, which a straw bale really is when you're using it this way, you need a container that's going to hold moisture. not lose all its moisture to the wind. And I would worry tremendously about growing potatoes in a straw bale, because the most important thing to safely grow potatoes is make sure the tubers, the developing tubers, are never exposed to light, or they can develop toxins. Even if the skins are not green, even if the flesh is not green, potatoes grown in a situation of too much light on the root system, on the tubers, are unsafe to eat. I used to buy a lot of straw in the fall for Halloween decorations as well, and I always saved it. I tried to keep it in a dry area, because I'm sure you discovered if you left it out in the open that the bottom got all moldy over the winter.
Yeah, and I did get mushrooms.
Now, do you have a garden? Do you have raised beds? Do you have flower gardens? Do you have something like that?
I have flower gardens. I was growing in my clay soil, and then I found out it had way too much lead in it. So this year I did not plant any vegetables, and I'm in the process of building up a raised bed.
Oh, okay. Go to our website. Go to the Garden Answers A to Z and read the article on lead in soil under L.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important that you don't work that soil again. But a lot of urban soil is contaminated with lead. So
yep.
It's good that you found it out. Now I kind of understand better why you want to do the straw bale gardening.
Kind of a Band-Aid until I got my real raised bed.
Well, I mean, you did it over this summer. What were your results like?
The potatoes aren't ready yet. The plant's still green, but that seemed to do really well. It looks great.
Mm-hmm.
I had zucchini and also some decorative pumpkin in the other one, and those are pathetic. The zucchini flowered a couple times, and that was it. They didn't get very large at all.
You know what you could do? If you wanted to put just some cardboard down on your soil, and then you could use them to create raised bed sides.
Okay.
You could, again, all you have to do, make sure you never work in the lead soil. Cover it with something impenetrable, like a couple layers of cardboard. And then you could arrange some straw bales in a kind of a square, but with an open center. Fill the center with soil, and you're going to get much better results. What I always did was simply, at the beginning of the garden season, I would start busting up the straw bales. By the way, something else that you also found out, a straw bale is heavy when it's dry, but it's impossible to move when it's soaking wet, isn't it, Monica?
It absolutely is. That's why it all winter.
It's like 300 pounds when it gets wet.
Mm-hmm.
But you bust it up into the little squares that are called flakes, and they make great mulch around gardens. There are old studies that showed that if you're growing potatoes in a raised bed and you use straw for the mulch, it keeps potato beetles away.
Hmm.
So there's lots of ways to use these. I understand the straw bale has an attraction, and now that you've explained that your soil is contaminated, everything you did made sense. And you are right to reuse those hay bales and the corn stalks. The corn stalks make excellent dried brown material for use in a compost pile if you didn't harvest fall leaves. Same with the straw. There's many uses for this, and now you kind of like push me. I think I should do a whole article on using straw bales, recycling straw bales, because there's just so many uses for them. But I wouldn't try to use them as containers alone. But as the sides of a raised bed or as mulch on a raised bed, they're absolutely excellent.
Great. Thank you, Mike.
All right. Good luck. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Stuart, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, hello.
How are you, Stuart?
I'm fine, sir.
And where are you fine?
I'm from Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay. Very good. And what can we do for Stuart in Kansas City?
Well, I started out, tried a little different gardening techniques, trying to go organic this year.
Right.
And started out, been doing some things that you don't recommend. Normally, through the ages, I've had the garden turned every year. Next year, I'm going to the no-till method with some raised garden beds. But anyway, this year, I have two gardens, an upper and a lower, that I switched between corn, tomatoes, and different things. My upper garden this year is where my tomato plants are. And I planted roughly 32 to 36 tomato plants of different varieties, heirlooms, yellows, and hybrids that you buy at the store, different things like that. My problem is it's getting close. Since I planted 30 days early, a lot of my rows, for some reason, have just died.
Now, Stuart, you said something about planting 30 days early?
Yes, I planted a whole month early this year. I got my tomatoes out.
But that's not, you didn't get a frost, or was it really?
No, I've not had a frost. I did not have the lowest of temperatures. I mean, they got somewhat chilly, but never in a danger category.
So you say you're transitioning to organic. What have you fed them this year?
This year I've just gone with a compost that I purchased down a local supply.
Okay, good.
That consisted of, I mean, the garden's roughly 35 foot long by 20 foot wide.
That's a little crowded for that many tomato plants in that small a spot.
Yeah, normally I go, yeah, that's what I try to do is I crowd them up pretty good as a rule. But like I say, I'm going to a raised garden bed, and I'm going to go with more room.
Yeah, because Stuart,
probably about 3 foot right now in between each plant.
But you don't have 3 foot of airspace between each plant.
Oh, not now. I don't know.
Yeah.
No.
See, I've been to Missouri, Stuart, and I know your enemy is the humidity in the summer. So if I gardened in Missouri, I would always make sure there was a foot of open air between each tomato plant. I mean, I do that in Pennsylvania.
Right.
But in Missouri, where you can swim through the air in August, especially as you get close to St. Louis, you really need that airspace between the plants. And I would say that when you crowd plants like that, you know, it's like having a crowded room. It's the people in the middle who are going to pass out for lack of air. What were the symptoms of the dying plants?
It looked like that the tomatoes were losing their juice, basically, and then they started being attacked by various insects.
Right.
And then as soon as that started, then I seen the yellowing of the leaves, and then that spread down to the vines, and then they were just pretty much gone. And I wound up digging the inside ones out. The exterior ones are, my first two rows of seven are doing still pretty well.
Right.
They're starting to rebloom again. But then my other ones are just slowly, they seem like they're prematurely meeting their maker.
Well, you said you mixed up your variety, so I can tell you what's going on here. I think the ones in the middle died from lack of airflow.
And
it also sounds like maybe one of the soil-borne wilts is building up in the soil there. Even though you're rotating a year of corn, a year of tomatoes, if tomatoes grew in those exact same spots 2 years ago, the wilt would still be there. And again,
the
stressed plants would do worse. It's perfectly natural. This is happening to me right now, that some tomatoes are still putting on flowers and other tomatoes are giving up. Because that just means you can go out in your garden and you can tell which ones are indeterminate, the heirlooms that keep on growing. And the ones that have stopped, they are hybrids that are determinate. And they were originally bred for farmers so they could harvest all the crop at once. And after that, because you notice those plants put on a real big flush.
Right.
And then pretty much they're done, and that's an interesting part of gardening. If you grow a lot of determinate plants, after you harvest that big flush, you can pull those plants out and put something else in, because those plants are not going to produce many more tomatoes.
Right.
And I'll tell you for a little trick for this year, as we start to approach the end of the season, which we're doing right now, you can go out and you can take off new flowers on your plants, because even in Missouri, you don't have enough time left for those flowers to produce ripe fruits. So if you pick off all the flowers from this period on, that will devote much more energy to the plant to ripen up the existing fruits, and you'll get a fabulous late harvest.
Oh, okay. But I still have quite a few green tomatoes left.
Right, and if you pull off the flowers, those greenies will ripen up much faster. And next year, what I do is I use tomato cages, and all my plants stay inside cages so that I make sure there's that foot of open air space between plants. I don't care what else you do wrong, Stu. If you have that airflow in Missouri, your plants are going to do better, guaranteed. Crowding is the enemy of tomato plants.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll keep that in mind for next season. I had a good season. I just thought it was ending prematurely.
Oh, we're all greedy, Stu. We're all greedy when it comes to tomatoes.
Well, thank you. I love listening to your show, sir.
Thank you. Take care.
Have a good day.
1-888-346-9499. Elaine, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, this is Elaine, and I live in Bethlehem, and I want to know how to get the nutsedge out of my yard.
Which Bethlehem, Elaine? A biblical one?
No, closer than that, Pennsylvania.
Okay, so you live in Bethlehem, PA.
Yes.
The Christmas city, I believe, right?
Isn't that what... It is definitely the Christmas city.
Right,
absolutely.
Right.
And everybody should come up and see it. It's lovely.
Yeah, it is a great little historic town. It has a great downtown area. Elaine, you have nutsedge in your lawn? That's typically more of a southern problem, but... It's also very distinctive. It's a weed grass that spreads by every way imaginable, including these little ground nuts that it forms. Or do you have something different?
No, it's nutsedge. We looked online and we've checked, and it's what everybody in the neighborhood says it is, and everybody has it. I didn't want to use chemicals, so we've been trying to pull it up, and it's a paler green than the grass. It grows faster than the grass.
There are a lot of invasive grass-like weeds that invade lawns, and there's almost no way you can get rid of the weed by attacking it directly, either with chemicals or organics. The reason these weeds get established is people, especially in the north, tend to take care of their lawn backwards. So let's talk about lawn care for a second. Who cuts your lawn?
Okay, my husband does.
And do you have any, what kind of a mower does he use?
He has a John Deere and it has a mulching blade on it.
Okay, good. And does he cut it at the highest possible setting?
He has been, but in a... trying to get rid of the nutsedge, he's been cutting it lower and more often.
That is favoring the weed and hurting the grass.
Okay.
You're in Bethlehem, PA, and
yes.
You haven't mentioned that your grass goes dormant over the winter, so I'm presuming you have a cool season lawn, fescue, rye, or bluegrass, or a combination. It has to be at least 3 inches high after he's done cutting, or these weeds are going to be... impossible to get rid of.
Okay. Right now he's cutting it too short because
yes.
I'm sure it's not 3 inches high. So.
See, the grass that you're growing is very stressed by summer. So it needs to be at its optimum height to survive summer. And if it's cut lower than 3 inches, it's going to be stressed. It's going to create bare areas. These weeds are going to move in. And the weeds, most of these weedy grasses are warm season weeds, so they thrive in the heat of summer. So you don't want to give them the upper hand. That grass has to be 3 inches after he's done cutting. If you can rearrange things where the grass is 3 inches high, you're going to start gaining ground on the weed. Who feeds your lawn?
He's been using Scott's fertilizer on it.
If he fed the lawn in summer, it killed part of the grass and it fed the weeds. These step programs, these four-step programs, they're bad for lawns. There's no other way around it.
Oh, okay.
People who are on a four-step program need to get on a 12-step program. If he hasn't, if he hasn't fed the lawn for the fall yet, tell him to switch to an organic fertilizer and give the lawn a big feeding in the fall and then a smaller feeding in the spring, and that's the only food.
Okay.
And then to cut the lawn at 3 inches. And now, during the heat waves, this was the hottest summer in history in your area.
Yes.
Did you supply the lawn with supplemental water?
No, we were watering trees and that sort of thing, but it's just, at a three-quarter of an acre, it seemed like...
That's understandable.
Yes.
But if you're not going to supplementally water, especially during the hottest and in the beginning of the season, the driest summer in history...
Yes.
You've got to cut it 3.5 inches high, and you can't let him cut the lawn during a dry heat wave because it releases all the stored moisture. Through no fault of your own, you have been treating the lawn as if you want this weed to be your lawn and you didn't like your wanted grass. So cut as high as possible, a minimum of 3 inches, only two feedings, spring and fall. Most people have weedy lawns because they're not caring for them correctly, but also this summer was the most stressful in history for northern lawns. So this was a good time for this weed to begin its takeover, but you can stop it now with the knowledge you now have.
Well, fabulous. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure, Elaine.
It sure beats trying to pull it all out by hand.
Yes, yes. The indirect way always wins in a lawn care.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck. Thank you.
And I do love your show. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Take care. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and alert those who are interested in such issues that the USDA is currently considering a petition to allow the growing of crops that have been genetically engineered to tolerate large amounts of the herbicide 2,4-D. And the deadline for comments is fast approaching on September 11th. But don't go rushing to our website for all the details just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how to do spot repairs and patchwork on your cool season lawn. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Cool Garden.
Burpee, a national supplier of seeds, plants, and bulbs, supports You Bet Your Garden and reminds growers that now is the time to start fall crops like broccoli, cabbage, and cauliflower, and to get ready for garlic planting. More information at burpee.com.
You're listening to You Bet Your Garden on WHYY.
A stroke can rob us of our ability to speak, to move, to understand. The new Mainline Health Neurovascular Center at Bryn Mawr Hospital uses an interventional approach to the rapid treatment of stroke and aneurysm. Formed in collaboration with stroke experts from Jefferson's Faculty Practice Plan and the Jefferson Neuroscience Network, they use minimally invasive techniques to avoid open brain surgery, to prevent disabilities, and to save lives. The Mainline Health Neurovascular Center at Bryn Mawr Hospital supports WHYY.
Taking a look at the WHYY forecast. Now mostly cloudy skies today. There is the chance for strong thunderstorms later this afternoon into the evening. Tomorrow mostly sunny and cooler with a high of 78. Monday just wonderful. Sunshine with a high of 75. And pretty much the same for Tuesday. And by the way, for weather updates regarding our WHYY Connections Festival, check out our Connections Festival page on Facebook today.
Monday on Radio Times, Marty Moscowen and her guests discussed the successes and challenges of the International Criminal Court, 10 years after it was first launched. Then join a music producer and a music writer as they talk about how pop music has changed in the last few decades. That's Radio Times, Monday from 10 to 12 on WHYY.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a few minutes, we'll get to the facts of overseeding. In this case, overseeding meaning filling in some bare spots, some ratty areas, and just making your cool season lawn look a little bit better after this harsh, harsh summer. It's all coming up right after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. John, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, John. How are you?
Fine, Mike. How are you today?
I am doing very well. John, where are you?
I am in Ventnor, New Jersey.
Very good. I know where Ventnor is. What can we do for John in the Garden State?
Well, not too much in the garden, but a couple of weeks ago, you had a young lady call with a mosquito problem, and you mentioned concentrated garlic oil.
Yes.
I can be sitting on our back deck with my wife and I. She will be bitten 5 or 6 times, and I will be bitten none.
So what's your problem, John?
Where can I buy the oil? I have been to a half a dozen places in South Jersey. I cannot find it.
Well, you know, that's unusual. Are you going to independent garden centers?
Yes.
The first thing I want to suggest is when you're sitting out on your porch or your patio,
right,
and you're allowing your wife to give blood, have you considered getting a big oscillating fan or one of those big church fans and just having it behind her, first to keep her cool? This has been a very hot summer,
right,
but that is a very old school way to keep mosquitoes away.
Okay.
Mosquitoes are very poor flyers. They can't go against any kind of a breeze.
Right.
So one nice thing about an outdoor fan, first of all, you like the outdoor fan. If you had thought of it just for the fan, you might have had a fan outdoors, especially on a still night. And
right.
on a still night, of course, is when the mosquitoes are the worst because they don't have any wind to have to fight through.
Right.
So perhaps you have a big old metal fan or a plastic fan on a pedestal or can get one of those.
I have exactly one, yes.
And if you take it outside and you plug it in while you're outdoors, you're paying a little bit of electricity, but you don't have to find and reapply sprays, which can become expensive.
Uh-huh.
So that is a very old school way. And of course, I hope before we proceed to the garlic oil, which does work very well, that you have cleaned out your gutters, that you don't have any water features in your property, you don't have any standing water, you know.
No standing water. I live back in Ventnor Heights, really, and at a abnormal high tide, we have several inches of salt water in our backyard.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, some mosquitoes actually like that.
Yeah, but when the tide goes down, there's no water lying there. There's no pooled water.
Yeah, but that's still enough for mosquitoes to breed in. That's very interesting.
Okay.
I would suggest you do two things then. I'm going to give you another hard thing to find. You've been in hardware stores and you've seen these mosquito dunks, these little donuts or briquettes that are made to throw into a pool or a pond.
Right. Yeah.
They're an absolutely natural substance called BTI, and they're available in granules for, like, your situation. I have some at home in a shaker can. And what you do is in that area of your lawn or the backyard that gets saturated on a regular basis, once a month you would shake these granules into the lawn because the mosquitoes are breeding right at the very soil line in that little area that stays wet at the top. And they can do it very quickly if the area is being flooded over and over again. But I can see how your mosquito problem could be immense in those situations.
Right.
So the...
What is the name of those granules again?
BTI. But you don't even have to remember that. You know, the generic term for the one formulation is the mosquito dunk, and it's something you throw in standing water, and the mosquito dunks come in granular form too.
Okay, I got you.
People will know. Now, the garlic oil is available under a variety of brand names. Now, I hope you're online, right?
No, I'm completely illiterate.
The best brand is a brand called Garlic Barrier. And they have another version of the same brand called Mosquito Barrier. This is the stuff that townships buy that they spray instead of poisonous pesticides to keep mosquitoes under control. The one that's most available at retail, and now I presume you're writing stuff down?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. There is a company called St. Gabriel's. I know it's a strange name for like a pest control company, but
right.
that's their name. Their name is St. Gabriel's, and they are literally the only distributor of milky spore disease, which people buy to put on their lawns to prevent Japanese beetle grubs.
Mm-hmm.
They also have a garlic oil product for mosquitoes in the backyard, and their product even comes in a hose and sprayer.
Okay.
So anybody who stocks milky spore, which would be any big independent garden center, if they don't have the garlic spray, and I think it's St. Gabriel's mosquito repellent, if they don't have it, they can order it. It's not very expensive, and what you do with either, if you get the concentrated oil, you put it in a sprayer, you mix it with the right amount of water, you spray it on your backyard. If you get the St. Gabriel's product, you attach your hose to it and spray it as directed on your backyard. And for the first couple of hours, you can smell a very strong smell of garlic.
Right.
After that, it goes away. But for the next 4 to 6 weeks, mosquitoes, ticks, and biting flies will avoid that area.
That's great. Okay.
So, okay. In some sense, it's a false trail to get a specific name. It's like people want to be told exactly what kind of plant to put in their yard. And then when they can't find it, they can't think of something similar.
I see.
Garlic oil sprays are widely available. If you're not online, a friend or a family member can help you order them online. But any garden center that has milky spore should be able to get you the St. Gabriel's product, which I've used.
What is that, milky for?
No. Milky, as in milky, and then spore, S-P-O-R-E. You've not heard of milky spore for lawn grubs? You don't get out much there, do you, John?
I don't have much of a problem, to tell you the truth.
It's a very common sight in garden centers in the spring and
the fall. Okay.
But if you ask people, do you sell St. Gabriel's products? They'll know the company, and then if they don't have it on the shelf, because maybe they have it on the shelf, but they're not understanding it from your description, they can order it. But for now, for tonight, put a fan out there. It's a mitzvah.
Yeah, I have one sitting right here in the hallway.
There you go, John. It's been there for you the whole time.
Very good.
All right, take care, sir.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Nizam, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes.
Excellent. And where is Nizam?
I'm in Columbus, Georgia.
Very good, sir. What can we do for you?
I have a fig plant in my backyard, and I had this plant since 3 years. What is happening is the plant is healthy, but the fruit is not ripening in time. The figs, I see a lot of figs, but they fall down without being ripened.
Oh, that's unusual. Where did you plant a cutting? Did you buy a fig tree
I bought a fig tree and just planted it in my backyard.
Do you feed the tree?
Yes.
What do you feed it?
Normal fertilizer, that's all.
Okay. So
I give a lot of water.
Okay. What kind of fertilizer?
Regular fertilizer, like 10-10-10.
Okay, good. Then we're just about done. Stop feeding it.
Okay.
Figs are not heavy feeders. And you're shocking the tree, and the tree is dropping its fruit.
I see.
Does it get full sun?
Yes.
Okay, good. And probably where you are in Columbus, Georgia, it doesn't get damaged very much over winter, does it?
No.
Okay. Is there any winter damage in the spring? Do you see any parts of the tree that were killed?
No.
Okay. If you do notice, for instance, in the springtime, any blackened tips or anything like that, prune those off.
Yes,
you can even give it a gentle pruning. Just take off like 6 inches all around in the early spring when it starts growing again.
Okay.
It likes that. No more of the chemical fertilizer. Figs don't need it, and it actually harms them. And when you water them, how exactly do you water?
I have a sprinkler system, and when I sprinkle my lawn, the same system the fig tree.
And this is like every day for 20 minutes?
Every day, yes.
Turn off any of the sprinklers near the fig tree.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, that's a terrible way to water plants. If you go through a real dry spell, take a hose and drop it at the base of the plant and just let it drip water there for a couple of hours once a week.
Okay.
Once a week. Yes. No plant wants to be watered every day. Those sprinkler systems are very difficult to set correctly. Matter of fact, your lawn would like it better if you watered your lawn much less frequently, but for longer periods of time.
Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. And none of this chemical fertilizer anywhere near the fig.
Okay.
Let it go natural. If you must water deeply and only once a week, and next year you're going to be eating figs, man.
Okay. Thank you so much for your advice.
All right. My pleasure. Good luck, sir.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. Overseeding a cool season lawn to fill in bare spots. Alexis Landis, You Bet Your Garden producer, please read this week's question.
Dane in Abington, Pennsylvania writes, I've seen people overseeding their lawns and was surprised that I couldn't find any mention of it in your A to Z archives. I think my lawn might be a candidate for overseeding, but how can I tell for sure? Is there a problem with overseeding a different type of grass than is currently present? Is there a resource for identifying what type of grass I already have?
Well, you're right. Overseeding is mentioned in a couple of my lawn care articles in our archives, but there's really nothing in depth or easily findable. And this is the perfect time of year to repair cool season lawns, so let's do it. Now, the term overseeding can have several different meanings, but for the patching and or spot repairing of certain areas, the qualifying rule, says our resident lawn care expert, Dr. Nick Christians of Iowa State University, is 30-70. That is, if 70% of your lawn is in fairly decent shape, and 30% or less is bare spots in ratty areas, you're a perfect candidate for spot repairs. But if more than half your lawn is bare, ratty, or composed of large patches of unacceptable weeds, Nick says to seriously consider tearing it all up and completely reseeding. Now, there's often no problem with using a different type of grass in the old lawn. The big exception, says Nick, is that you shouldn't patch areas in a bluegrass lawn with a turf-type tall fescue. Otherwise, a lot of high-quality bag grass seed is already a mixture of types. I'm looking at a bag right now that's a combination of three fescues, a bluegrass, and a perennial rye. The reason this won't, or shouldn't, grow a patchwork quilt is that the varieties have been selected to have matching blade shapes and colors, and thus produce a consistent and visually pleasing lawn. That's why you should always buy a named brand of seed when you sow a new lawn, so you can match it up when you have to do repairs. If you know what seed you started with, just buy it again. Or ask an expert what would match the blade shape and color of your existing grass. Your local county extension office could be a great resource for this. If not, they should be able to point you in the right direction. If you don't know what you have, dig up about a square foot of your turf, including the root system, and either show it to the folks at your local extension office and or take it around to a couple of nurseries or garden centers that specialize in premium grass seed. Okay? Let's move on to the actual work. Now that the summer heat stress period is over, it's safe to cut a cool season lawn down to around 2 inches once to better see what you're doing. Use a mulching mower. The pulverized clippings will help feed your new grass. For areas that are truly bare, just rough up the soil with a cultivator. If there are clusters of weeds, soak the soil deeply and slowly pull them out, or cut small sections out of the soil with something like a linoleum knife. If the lawn is full of thatch, dethatching and raking would be an excellent idea. Once you're satisfied with your prep work, the ideal next step would be to spread an inch of compost over the entire lawn. This would provide a perfect bed for the new seed and take care of feeding the new and existing grass for the fall. Otherwise, spread an inch of high-quality yard waste compost over the prepared areas, sow the new seed, cover it lightly with more compost, and then water the entire lawn as gently as possible for 20 to 30 minutes every morning until the new grass sprouts, which should be pretty fast as the soil temperatures are still nice and warm. When the first new sprouts appear, back off to morning watering every other day for about a week. Then go longer and less frequently, say an hour twice a week for another week or so. After that, fall into the pattern you should follow for the life of your turf. 1 inch of water delivered in one long soaking once a week until winter hits. Obviously, don't water if you get rain. And try not to drop your seed right before a predicted deluge. Once all the new grass has been up and growing for about 2 weeks, give your entire lawn its fall feeding if you didn't spread all that compost before seeding. You can use corn gluten meal or a bagged organic fertilizer labeled for lawns. Do not use a so-called conventional chemical fertilizer. It could burn up your tender new grass. Cut the entire lawn at 3 inches from now on, no lower. And if leaves typically fall onto your lawn in the fall, be prepared to suck them off with a blower vac this year. Let your new grass get really well established before you rake it. And if you have a warm season grass like Zoysia, Bermuda, or St. Augustine, don't do anything in the fall. The time for you to renovate your lawn is when it greens up in the spring. Well, that sure was some good information about fixing up your cool season lawn now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website, where you can read it over carefully and follow links to lots more articles about lawn care. Just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to overseed my bare spot if I don't get out of this studio. That could be fine with me if we'll grow something up there, even if it is green. Anyway, we're out of time, but you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teaming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Please put the actual subject in the subject line and check voice to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week, find the solution to hundreds of garden problems in our Garden Answers A to Z section, and or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Kevin, don't call me Merv Griffin. Our webmaster is Baneful Rich Banowitz. His faithful internet companion is Sarah Kazar. Like us on Facebook. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath, who says, like us on Facebook. There are no bare spots on Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. The decidedly non-ratty Joanna Hatzis is our production assistant. A little thin on top is our esteemed editor, Al Banks. I'm more than half weedy, so I guess we have to tear me up and start over again next week. Can you grow garlic in containers over the winter? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll change our position on this topic of great importance to ground-free growers. Plus your fabulous phone calls.
Fabulous fescue, flowers, fruit, all sorts of fecund flora. Mike's got a flair for making it feasible for the rest of us. So join us for You Bet Your Garden Saturday mornings at 11 here.